Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, everybody, it's Kai.
And I am Molly. Welcome to Make Me Smart. It is finally real.
We are here. Season one, episode one, ready, begin.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, this is not a mini-episode, people.
Not a mini-episode. It's not a pilot.
Since we've had, like, 9 months to build up to this, and I don't know if you've noticed, there's, a lot going on in the world. We're going to get right to it.
We are.
The news fix.
We're going to start most times with a little news fix. What's going on out there in the, I apologize for using this word because I kind of hate it, the zeitgeist, right? And the zeitgeist right now is completely political. So I thought a place to start, Molly, might be this. Mm-hmm. Keying off the fact that there's a new person in the White House and that there are protests against a new person in the White House, what the deal is with some of the policies that are being introduced and how they are being perceived by various members of the public. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, what we have noticed is that hysteria is at a high. It's at 11. The hysteria goes to 11 right now. And so there are responses all over the place to sort of every action. And we are going to try to make sense of which ones of those actions make sense, make perfect sense within the context of a new incoming Republican administration backed by an all-Republican
yep.
Congress. And which ones fall outside of sort of standard behavior or things that we might have expected from a Republican administration. Try to just like take some examples,
right.
Break it down.
Right. So I got one for you, and I'm going to push a button here right off the bat. You ready?
Yep.
And this I think falls within the standard ideological fare of a conservative administration. Mm-hmm. Ajit Pai, the new chairman designate of the Federal Communications Commission. Right.
Oh, yeah.
He's all about free markets. He's all about letting those market forces work. And he is, to the point of me bringing this up, an opponent of net neutrality regulations, which were put into place under the Obama administration.
Yeah. And the FCC, it has to be said, has been firmly split along ideological lines all throughout the last administration. Almost, you know, most of the major votes were a 3-2 split. So the mm-hmm. way that the commission works is that there's 5 commissioners and the chair is appointed by the administration. And so the majority always goes with the party that is in power. So that is now the case. And Ajit Pai has been what was an opponent, a firm opponent of Tom Wheeler's reclassification of the internet as essentially a utility, the Title II reclassification. Mm-hmm. And so we can expect that that's going to be first on the agenda for the FCC is to roll back that now. And that's different from rolling back net neutrality specifically. It's like a fine point. But the thing that they have to do first is figure out the classification, because then the questions of net neutrality could potentially end up with the FTC.
But the point being, we are on the way now, because we elected a Republican president, we are on the way now to more market-based solutions in the telecommunications industry, right? And
yep.
and that is within the norm. That's within yep. a standard deviation.
Yes.
Right?
Also within standard deviation, actually, the executive order that President Trump signed yesterday, it's like hard, they're coming so fast and furious, but yeah. the one that's being referred to as the global gag rule, the ban on U.S. foreign aid being given to organizations that support, provide, or give advice about abortion.
Right.
So it's essentially international defunding of Planned Parenthood is the simplest way to think of it.
And if you think of it that way, right, if you think of it in the Planned Parenthood context, what we have here is a defunding with this level, but also a proposed defunding of actual Planned Parenthood in this country of a major provider of women's health care.
Yeah. But again, within the mm-hmm. norm for Republican administrations. This, it was called the Mexico City rule,
yep.
basically.
Yep.
It was introduced by Ronald Reagan in 1984. Since Reagan, right? Every time a Democrat comes into power, gets the presidency, they suspend the policy. And every time a Republican comes back in, they reinstate the policy. You could say it would have been great if you oppose this policy for one of those Democratic administrations to set up maybe some sort of mechanism for it to not get reinstated instantly.
Mm-hmm.
But that is what has happened. And it is, again, if you think about this as a Republican thing, not a huge surprise.
All right. So let's venture into the land of unintended consequences, shall we? Because this is where it gets really interesting. And here's one that the president ran on, he won on, and he has this week acted on his promise to take the United States out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, right? The big Obama trade deal upon which Mr. Obama bet the global trade ranch, if you will, right? It was us and 11 or 12 other countries in the Asia-Pacific region, and it was going to tie things up in a neat and tidy little bow and let the Americans sort of drive the conversation there. Mr. Trump has pulled us out of that, and now things are happening that are perhaps not what people thought was going to happen.
Well, for one thing, Bernie Sanders is all for it.
I know. Well, Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders are on the same side. And you're like, wait, this is an alternate universe, man.
The same side. Right. And while Republicans have expressed some opposition to trade agreements, it's not clear that they necessarily would have chosen this route, particularly since the sort of immediate unintended consequence seems to be that it's handed the Asian market, the Pacific market, over to China.
Well, you know, so
that New Zealand and others are immediately agitating for China to take the place of the U.S. in a new agreement.
And the Chinese have said, if I may here, fei chang gan xie. Thank you very, very much. Because Xi Jinping went to Davos last week and gave this speech that you could see an American president giving, talking about leadership in the world and how free trade is important and all of those things. And the Chinese now are like, okay, fine, you don't want to do it. We're going to do it. And I think that is while Mr. Trump got a lot of votes for that stand and while free trade is a tricky thing for individuals in any given economy, in the macro sense, it's recognized that free trade is a macro good. And this is one of those unintended consequences.
Yeah, that could weaken the U.S. in the long term.
Right.
All right. So then now let's talk about. So that one is a little bit of an unknown or an accident. Let's talk about some of the policy decisions that we've seen right off the bat that are maybe you could say outside the error bars. Right. The ones that are just like, wait, whoa, 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 what?
Like what?
Actually, as a Kai would say, a whoa what?
No, wait, what? Wait, what?
Oh, sorry. Wait, what?
Yeah, wait, what?
See, that's why you should say it, actually, not me.
Wait, what?
There it is.
Anyway, what were you talking about?
It's the first one.
Which one? Take your pick.
There's a bunch of them, but let's jump straight to a policy of issuing falsehoods from the White House.
Well, yeah.
Referring to them as alternative facts.
Yep.
And making them, you know, look, everybody spins. Every press secretary is expected to lie, but these are easily verifiable claims.
Right.
And then they're doubled down on in a way that the press, frankly, has no idea how to deal with.
Right. Well, I mean, the really interesting part of this is first of all, the press doesn't have any idea. I certainly don't have any idea how effectively to deal with this new phenomenon. But Tyler Cowen had an amazing piece in Bloomberg View the other day in which he said, listen, here's what's going on. Mr. Trump is having his subordinates go out and make false statements, in essence, so that he owns them.
Right.
And it's a loyalty device, which is a really interesting consequence of some of these decisions that are being made, one assumes, in the Oval Office.
Yeah. Certainly there are reports to that effect from insiders who are speaking, at least to The Washington Post. So it's something that we have not seen before. And that's sort of the dividing line we're trying to make here. Other things we have not seen before that apparently it grants to the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, have been frozen by executive order.
Grants by the EPA, right?
Grants by the EPA. Sorry. Yes. Now, that could be construed as being part of a broad federal hiring freeze, which is pretty standard, especially for a Republican administration bent on reducing the size of the government. However, one EPA employee said he's been there in nearly a decade and said that even though hiring freezes have happened, freezing grants and contracts effectively halts all day-to-day work and is unprecedented. And no one can talk about it because they issued this. They did it by an executive order, just a memo, and then sent the EPA staff a memo that, of course, was instantly leaked that said, you can't say anything about this to anybody.
So you know, here's an interesting thing. And let me just take us sideways for a little bit, right? Because while we're having a discussion of norms, right, which is the phrase that became the standard in the campaign to talk about what Mr. Trump was doing that was not conventional, right? So we're having this conversation about norms as they are seen from outside the White House. I would bet you $11 bajillion that inside the White House, they are saying exactly what they mean. And they were elected on a platform and a premise of blowing stuff up. And they are going to do that, norms be damned. And just to relate a little bit of my reporting from last week in Erie voters, Trump voters in Erie County, rather, are totally okay with that. They are blow it all up because whatever you've been doing. Right. It was the point. Whatever you've been doing has not been working for us. And I wonder now as we all in the media and the observing public and then the voting public try to adapt to this, there's a whole layer of you got to see things from the other side to understand why and how they're doing what they're doing. That's just
absolutely.
You know?
And I think it's really important to separate like the reason that we're doing this exercise now is that I think it's really important to separate the stuff that you're going to hear about that people don't agree with or some people don't agree with that is perfectly expected from a Republican administration from the stuff that is blowing things up. Right. We need it. We almost need a little like we should get a little TNT sound for like, OK, this right here, this is a blow up. Moment. The EPA thing is a blow up.
That's you wrapping stuff up. That's you might as well just say, hey, Kai, we got to move on. Come on, let's hit it. So we're going to hit.
We should move on. Don't you think?
Yes, we're moving on. Oh, my God. That was great.
All right. But we do want to keep this conversation going. So here's our plug for that. Follow us on Twitter at Kai Rizdahl, at Molly Wood. Use the hashtag Make Me Smart. And we want to hear your comments.
Please.
And your suggestions for TNT sounds.
The first 100 days, I'm actually excited to see if people start changing their mind about Trump and realizing the good that he wants to do for America.
First, the most I'd like to see is to get rid of some of this regulation that's stifling our economy. We're the most overregulated country in the world.
I'm actually a manager at McDonald's. It's kind of embarrassing, but you know what I mean? I worked my way up and, you know, It's a rough job. It's a full-time job. But at the end of the day, you know, I want to do better for myself. And there has to be more jobs out there for me to move on. So right now in Pittsburgh, there's not really any jobs.
That was Tracy Brown, Ed Rogerville, and Lori Coleman. They were in Washington, D.C. for the inauguration of President Trump.
And they represent a thing that we want to happen on this show, because since we announced the podcast, you've been writing to us with a lot of questions about things you want to be smarter about. Your voices are really important to us.
And here's the way it's going to work. We will add what we know. We will throw it in there, and then we will throw it back to the rest of you for what you can add to this conversation.
Mm-hmm. We're starting now with questions. Eventually, we're going to want answers. But seriously, you have so many questions.
Yes.
It's amazing. If you missed it yesterday, we did a Facebook Live video where we kicked around some topic ideas, where we sort of introduced the concept. We're going to do that every week.
Yep.
And the questions were amazing. They were about TPP. They were about net neutrality. They were about some of the things we'll get to a little later in the show. But our first question, and he recorded it for us, comes from Bob Price.
Make me smart.
Make me smart.
Hey, make me smart.
My question for Kai and Molly is this. Can you explain the concept of short selling in the markets as it relates to Donald Trump, our new president, and his tweeting about companies, both good and bad? I'm not exactly sure how a lot of that works, though it sounds like it's something that we might want to explore.
Well, so here's why he asked that question, I imagine, right? He asked that question because Mr. Trump, as we saw during the transition, we haven't really seen it so much since the inauguration, but he would tweet out things about companies, whether it was Carrier or Boeing in the case of Air Force One, and he would say mean things about those companies. Air Force One costs too much. Planes are too expensive. Going to negotiate. And the company shares, while not dropping like a stone, would fall like 1%, which if you're a shareholder of Boeing is like, that's money out of my retirement. And that's why that question is relevant, because Mr. Trump has the power to move markets in 140 characters, which to this day amazes me.
And what he asked us in print was, if he or his friends know, and this is the real question, if he or his friends know what is going to be said before he says it, isn't there a real chance for some money to be made and for insider trading to be alleged? So we did, and when I say we, I mean our awesome producer, Jenny Josephson, who's making this whole thing happen, voluminous amounts of research. on what this means and how it could happen.
So first of all, the idea of shorting a stock, it is in essence, in a very, very boiled down sense, it is betting that a stock is going to go down. So if Donald Trump wakes up in the morning and says to Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, I'm going to tweet bad things about Boeing, look at what happens, and Kushner goes out and makes the trade, the short trade, betting that Boeing's going to go down, that would be sort of an interesting case law for the SEC to see about what's going on there with insider trading, which is the secondary concern out of Bob Price's question.
Yeah, and the thing about insider trading, turns out, is that it comes in two forms, and the forms are both legal and illegal. So there is such thing as legal insider trading, which is that corporate insiders are allowed to buy and sell shares of stock within their own companies, and a lot of them are going to know things. There are certain insiders, officers, directors, anybody who holds 10% of the company's securities, they have to report those trades to the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC.
The bigger question, though, and the one that fascinates me, actually, is he going to be able to tweet? And what's anybody going to do about it? Right? I mean, that's right. The thing, because it's not like he's going to trade on this stuff, because in theory, he's busier running the company. But the question of who is going to do what about this information is, to me, fascinating and in the short term, probably unknowable, actually. I don't even know.
It is very likely unknowable is the thing. There is, you know, there's illegal insider trading. There's an argument to be made. There's going to be some case law, I think, that people are watching about at what point this could tip over. This is from Forbes, anyone who knows the contents of the president's tweet before it becomes public may be in possession of market-moving information. To me, this answer gets back to the original question, which is, how much do we need to know, right? This is a question you may have heard on the radio today.
Right. It goes back to the top.
Which is, how much do we need to know about the business dealings? Because a lot of people stand to make a lot of money, whether he tweets or not. Now it's like, do you stand to make a lot of money from an executive order that you know might be coming?
Right. And here's the deal, by the way. Wall Street knows this stuff. So there are actually people on Wall Street working to make algorithms to profit off the president and his tweet storms. Because there's opportunity. And that's, you know, it's Wall Street is capitalism and capitalism is Wall Street. And that's the way it goes.
Now America is capitalism too.
America's capitalism too.
We got so many other good questions from our Facebook Live video. Like I mentioned, this one came from Nick Colley. Numbers get thrown around a lot. This was like Kai bait, this question.
Oh, man.
Kai, numbers get thrown around a lot.
Oh, my God. Can I even tell you?
How do we as citizens question the legitimacy of those numbers? And can we have a statistics primer? And can you tell us, and I'm just tacking this on editorially, can you tell us what happened to your head when Sean Spicer flat out refused to answer the question of what the federal unemployment rate was?
So I guess I'm going to appropriate one of your things, which is the Molly rant, and I'm going to do a little Kai rant here, right? One of the things that happened during the campaign was that Donald Trump continually delegitimized, well, many things, the election process itself, but the other one he delegitimized a lot was government statistics, government economic statistics, and what they could tell us. And so you had a thing that happened in our economic survey of October in which something like 70% of all Donald Trump voters, and we went out and asked people this, said they do not believe at all or do not mostly believe government economic statistics, right? Which is a deep and brutal problem if you are trying to, A, report on this economy as we are, but also run a business in this economy, because those numbers are what a lot of companies, many, all companies, use to make their plans and formulations and staffing and all of this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So yesterday, Mara Liasson from NPR says to Sean Spicer, can you tell me what the unemployment rate is? And Sean Spicer goes, humana, 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 for 3 minutes and 30-something seconds, in which he pointedly did not answer the question. Now, the thing is, there are a lot of ways to measure unemployment in this economy, and it is immensely complicated. And we, yes, use the very convenient headline number of 4.7% as the main unemployment number. But the idea that we are now in a situation where we cannot depend on the government to vouch for its own numbers is, to me, deeply problematical.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing about jobs. We are going to get on Friday next, that is the first Friday of the month, the December jobs report, which the Trump administration will have had nothing to do with policy-wise, but it will be interesting to see how they respond to that number, whether it's up or down, and what they say about it.
I will be interested.
Totally.
Look, the simple answer is numbers can lie just as much as people can.
Right.
Right. So look for obvious signs. Look for giant sample sizes if you're reading polls. Don't ever trust a web-based poll.
Yep.
In fact, on Marketplace Weekend, we interviewed a brilliant pollster about this who has a great name that I can't remember right now. But I am going to find it. I'm going to find it and put it up on our website because it's a really great, it is exactly what you asked for, which is a primer on which polls to trust and why. And the short answer is, look, if it happened on the web and somebody could click a radio button, no.
don't do that.
That's a no.
Oh, my God.
But keep those kinds of questions coming because, like, as I mentioned, every Monday that we are in cell phone range at 10:30 a.m. Pacific, we will be doing a little Facebook Live video like we did yesterday. Those aren't going in the podcast feed. I've seen some questions about that. These are strictly bonus content. And you can find them on our Facebook pages, facebook.com/KaiRizdahl or facebook.com/Mollywood.
And we are going to use your comments and questions on the podcast. That's what we should say, right? We're going to use that for fodder and sort of drive this whole Make Me Smart idea.
The whole point is us not doing any work and you helping us.
We got to pay the bills.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
I have multiple concerns. I'm concerned about the normalization of hate speech. I'm concerned about the authoritarian threat to the freedom of the press.
You know, the civil rights of people, all the rights, everything that we've done for the environment, people, immigrants. I mean, it's just education. I was a teacher for 40 years. So all I know about public schools, and I know how great they can be. And what he's doing with that cabinet that he selected, you know, that is not for the people. It is for Trump's interest only.
I have concerns about the first day, the first week, and the first 100 days. First of all, I think that all Americans should have health care, and I want him to stop talking about grabbing women. And please stay off the Twitter.
That was Sammy Chittum, Maria Ray, and my new favorite, Sylvia Willis. God. 74 years old, 74 years young.
Yeah.
All of them were at, as you might have guessed, the Women's March, this one in Los Angeles.
Stay off the Twitter. All right. So
stay off the Twitter.
Stay off the Twitter. Here's the other part of what this podcast is going to be. Us talking to people, people who are experts in their field, people who have interesting things to say, what have you. And we're going to ask them questions as well.
Yeah, all these great people we get to talk to all the time. We thought, like, we're going to just tack on a little extra here. And while Kai was on the road, I interviewed Carl Bass, the CEO of Autodesk. Okay, that sounds less than fascinating.
I was going to say that, but okay.
It's super interesting. Autodesk makes AutoCAD, which at one point was the most widely used design software in the world. Like, it's the one that people use to – it's architects – every architect office uses it to design buildings. But they use it to design airplanes and cars and all this other stuff. But he – is fascinating and cool. And I asked him what was something that he didn't used to be smart about that he has gotten smart about over time just for this show. And his answer was like so perfect for our first podcast.
The thing I've gotten smarter about, there's lots of specific things, you know, so individual things where I now know how to machine things and make things and I know how to 3D print. But I'd say the thing that I've learned the most is how to learn. And how to learn in this new world in which all the information's available to you in some strange and diffuse way. You know, it's kind of at your fingertips, and yet it's not there. But if I think back to when I was growing up, you know, I grew up in New York City. I'd get on a bus, and I'd go to the public library and look at it up in the card catalog and hope there was a book on the subject. Mm-hmm. And then half the time it was there, half the time it was there, but the pages were ripped out. And now you have the internet with all this information available to you. And so figuring out how can I go deep on something in a short amount of time, learn it well, not get into that state of weird distraction, you know, where you follow like your Google search, you know, next thing you know, 2 hours have gone by. Mm-hmm. And so the thing I've learned the most is how to use what's out there, and particularly the thing for many of the things I do, I spend ridiculous amounts of hours on YouTube, like watching videos of how to do this. You know, yes, I was looking at the CNC machining one. I was helping my nephew, and we were looking at how to pull an engine out of a car. I mean, this is a total transformation, you know, from 30 years ago in how you learned. And so that's what I've learned.
I love that. I love learn how to learn.
Right.
Like,
that's
come on. It's like he made that answer just for us.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
It's beautiful.
Whole thing is where? Marketplace.org,
yeah,
yes?
I did this interview while I was secretly hosting the show. It wasn't a secret.
It might have been a secret.
Totally
for me.
I don't know about that. It was a great interview. It's at marketplace.org. Super interesting guy.
Before we go, though, one other question we asked people at the inauguration and at the Women's March here in LA was this: what do you want people on the other side of this big question we're having in this country today to know about you? The first three are from the inauguration. The next three are from the Women's March in Los Angeles. Here's the tape.
For people that didn't vote for Trump, I am a patriot through and through. I grew up in the military family, and I'm as patriotic as you get, and I love everybody, no matter race, gender, ethnicity. And I just want us all to come together for our country and unify as one.
I'm really not concerned what they know about me or what they don't. they're unhappy that Trump won. I get that. I understand that. They need to just get on with their life. President Obama was president for 8 years. I didn't like it. I never missed a day of work over it. I never got in a fight over it or anything else. Went about my business. So I think they need to learn to do the same thing.
Well, about me, I guess, I don't know, I'm just a regular guy, just like everyone else that's here. But about other Trump supporters, I mean, we're all nice people. Most of us are. I mean, there are some bad people out there, but most people are good at heart, I think, and just give everyone a chance. That's all.
That we're all human, that we're not on different teams, that if they took the time to try to talk to us, that we'd be willing to talk and engage and learn from one another. We're not hostile. We don't think they're all deplorable. We're willing to bridge that gap if they are.
That I'm an American, just like them, that I have every right. I deserve respect. I deserve respect as a woman, as a minority, and as a citizen of this country.
I love America, and I, you know, for those who voted for him that are hurting economically, I feel your pain. We all want a better America. We need to do it together, not be divided.
Man, I'll tell you what, that was a great through line right there, right? It was, I'm an American. Mm-hmm. We got to do this together, and we got to talk to each other. That was fascinating. All right, so don't forget to rate us, by the way, in iTunes. We're on Google Play as well. Leave us a review. It helps other people find us, you know, and that's the deal.
Also, it makes us feel super good to read those comments. They're so nice. Even if they're not nice, though, you can say that, too.
Yeah.
Also, please join us next Monday, as I mentioned, 10:30 Pacific time on Kai's Facebook page. We're going to just start it there. I'll be posting the video afterwards on mine. Facebook.com/KaiRizdahl. That's when we will be figuring out what we're going to talk about next week.
How did it go this week?
And that is it, everyone. We are so grateful to our producers, Jenny Josephson, Bridget Bodner, and senior producer Nancy Fergali. Thank you to Miriam Barsh, our DC intern. She got us that tape on Inauguration Day. This week's program was engineered by Daniel Ramirez, and our theme music is composed in the house by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez.
Daniel Ramirez basically does everything around here, right? Isn't that the deal? The executive producer of Marketplace is Tar Nieves. The vice president, senior vice president rather, and general manager is Deborah Clark. And we're done.
all over the country.
We need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.